You're listening to media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. We are a multi-generational, Jesus-centered community of scripture, faith, and grace located in Tallahassee, Florida, on the campus of Florida State University. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. We hope that the next few moments are a time when God speaks into your life by the power of His Holy Spirit about His Son, Jesus Christ. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again for Together with Jesus as we walk through the Gospels two chapters at a time. We hope that you're having a good week. And this week, we are going to be taking a look at Matthew chapters 25 and 26. So we're getting close to the end of the gospel, and here Jesus starts off with a few parables. So we're going to be reading it out of the New English Translation this week. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of the virgins were foolish, and 5 were wise. When the foolish ones took their lamps, they did not take extra olive oil with them, but the wise ones took out flasks of olive oil with their lamps. When the bridegroom was delayed a long time, they all became drowsy and fell asleep. But at midnight there was a shout, "Look, the bridegroom is here, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, because our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there won't be enough for you and for us. Go instead to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they had gone to buy it, the bridegroom arrived, and those who were ready went inside with him to the wedding banquet. Then the door was shut. Later, the other virgins came too, saying, "Lord, Lord, let us in." But he replied, "I tell you the truth, I do not know you. Therefore, stay alert, because you do not know the day or the hour. For it is like a man going on a journey who summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The one who had received 5 talents went off right away and put his money to work, and gained 5 more. In the same way, the one who had gained 2 more. But the one who received 1 talent went out and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money in it. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled his accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came and brought 5 more, saying, 'Sir, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master answered, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You have been faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' The one with the 2 talents also came and said, 'Sir, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more. His master answered, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Then the one who had received the 1 talent came and said, 'Sir, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.' But his master answered, 'Evil and lazy slave! So you knew that I harvest where I didn't sow and gather where I didn't scatter? Then you should have deposited my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10. For the one who has will be given more, and he will have more than enough. But the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless slave into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be assembled before him, and he will separate people one from another like a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me.' Then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer him, I tell you the truth, just as you did it for one of the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did it for me. Then he will say to those on his left, Depart from me, you accursed, into the eternal fire that has been prepared for you, for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not receive me as a guest. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they too will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick in prison and did not give you whatever you needed? Then he will answer them, I tell you the truth, just as you did not do it for one of the least of these, you did not do it for me. And these will depart into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he told his disciples, You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people met together in the palace of the high priest, who was named Caiaphas. They planned to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him, but they said not during the feast, so that there won't be a riot among the people. Now while Jesus was in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of expensive perfumed oil. And she poured this on his head as he was at the table. When the disciples saw this, they became indignant and said, Why this waste? It could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. When Jesus learned of this, he said to them, Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a good service for me. For you will always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this oil on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. I tell you the truth, wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Then one of the 12, named Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, What will you give me if I betray him into your hands? So they set out 30 silver coins for him. From that time on, Judas began looking for an opportunity to betray him. Now on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus and said, Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover? He said, Go into the city to a certain man and tell him, The teacher says my time is near. I will observe the Passover with my disciples at your house. So the disciples did as Jesus had instructed them, and they prepared the Passover. When it was evening, he took his place at the table with the 12. And while they were eating, he said, I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me. They became greatly distressed, and each one began to say to him, Surely not I, Lord. He answered, The one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. The Son of Man will go as it is written about him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would be better for him if he had never been born. Then Judas, the one who would betray him, said, Surely not I, Rabbi. Jesus replied, You have said it yourself. While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and after giving thanks, he broke it, gave it to his disciples, and said, Take, eat, this is my body. And after taking the cup and giving thanks, he gave it to them, saying, Drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood, the blood of the covenant, that is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, from now on, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. After singing a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, This night you will fall away because of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. Peter said to him, If they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Jesus said to him, I tell you the truth, on this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. Peter said to him, Even if I must die with you, I will never deny you. And all the disciples said the same thing. Then Jesus went with them to the place called Gethsemane, and he said to the disciples, Sit here while I go over there and pray. He took with him Peter and the 2 sons of Zebedee and became anguished and distressed. Then he said to them, My soul is deeply grieved, even to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake with me. Going a little farther, he threw himself down with his face to the ground and prayed, My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. yet not what I will, but what you will. Then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. He said to Peter, So you couldn't stay awake with me for 1 hour? Stay awake and pray that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away a second time and prayed, My Father, if this cup cannot be taken away, unless I drink it, your will must be done. He came again and found them sleeping. They could not keep their eyes open. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is approaching, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us go. Look, my betrayer is approaching. While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent by the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, The one I kiss is the man, arrest him. Immediately he went up to Jesus and said, Greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. Jesus said to him, Friend, do what you are here to do. Then they came and took hold of Jesus and arrested him. But one of those with Jesus grabbed his sword, drew it out, and struck the high priest's slave, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, Put your sword back in its place, for all who take hold of the sword will die by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot call on my Father and that he would send me more than 12 legions of angels right now? How then would the scriptures say it must happen this way to be fulfilled? At that moment, Jesus said to the crowd, Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me like you would an outlaw? Day after day, I sat teaching in the temple courts, yet you did not arrest me. But this has happened so that the scriptures of the prophets would be fulfilled. Then all the disciples left him and fled. Now the ones who had arrested Jesus led him to Caiaphas, the high priest, in whose house the experts of the law and the elders had gathered. But Peter was following him from a distance all the way to the high priest's courtyard. After going in, he sat with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were trying to find false testimony against Jesus so that they could put him to death. But they did not find anything, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, This man said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days. So the high priest stood up and said to him, Have you no answer? What is this that they are testifying against you? But Jesus was silent. The high priest said to him, I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, You have said it yourself, but I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes and declared, He is blasphemed. Why do we still need witnesses? Now you have heard the blasphemy. What is your verdict? They answered, He is guilty and deserves death. Then they spat in his face and struck him with their fists, and some slapped him, saying, Prophesy for us, you Christ. Who hit you? Now Peter was standing outside in the courtyard. A slave girl came to him and said, You also were with Jesus the Galilean. But he denied it in front of them all. I don't know what you're talking about. When he went out to the gateway, another slave girl saw him and said to the people there, This man was with Jesus, the Nazarene. He denied it again with an oath. I do not know the man. After a little while, those standing there came up to Peter and said, You really are one of them too. Even your accent gives you away. At that, he began to curse and he swore an oath. I do not know that man. At that moment, a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered that Jesus had said, Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly.
All right, everybody. As you can tell from the readings, things are starting to get pretty serious with the passion of Jesus. And we're going to be talking about what all of those things mean as we're looking into Matthew 25 and 26 today. This is the after party where we talk about what we just read. So chapter 25, what we started off reading, is a series of 3 parables. Now, we've seen Matthew do this before, where he has these sort of clumps of parables that he brings up. And usually they are things that all sort of interrelate with one another. And we can see that as we start to sort of pull back and we see the bigger picture. So what Jesus has been doing here, he's been talking to his disciples on the Mount of Olivet. In fact, a lot of times this section gets called the Olivet Discourse, where Jesus is talking to his disciples on the Mount of Olives after they've been to Jerusalem. They're looking back at the city, and they're kind of talking about, okay, what are things going to be like when Jesus leaves? So he's given them some prophecies about what that is going to be like. He's given them some warnings, some things to look out for. Here, with these three parables, so we have the parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the talents, and then this thing that usually gets called a parable, even though it doesn't quite seem like a parable, which is the parable of the judgment. So when Jesus talks about when the Son of Man comes, he's going to separate people as sheep and goats, what he's talking about there is sort of parable language, even though it doesn't quite fit the normal frame of what a parable is. It still gets called a parable. All of these things talk about being ready. All of these things talk about what Jesus' expectations for his disciples are when he leaves. And that's going to be important because in the next chapter, as you heard, things are going to start ramping up with his passion. He's going to start to get ready to go to the cross and to finally die there for our sins and then raise again from the dead. And so he's starting to prepare his disciples for his departure, not only his departure in terms of death on the cross, but also his eventual departure from them when he goes up into the heavens on Ascension Day. And so these three parables, we have the first one, which is the parable of the 10 virgins. The parable here is largely about what the disciples should be doing in terms of being ready, that they should always be ready, they should always be prepared, and they should always be prepared for Jesus to come back whenever. And so this kind of builds on the parable that we talked about last week in chapter 24, the parable of the faithful servant whose master goes and then comes back, and what he finds is that there has been an unfaithful servant who has been, you know, drinking and carousing. There is also another servant who is faithful, who has been doing exactly what he has been told to do throughout. Well, that's kind of the picture here of the parable of the 10 virgins as well as the talents, where Jesus is telling his disciples, okay, what I am expecting out of you is to be ready at all times, be ready for my return. And that certainly is the case then finally when we get to the story of the judgment in this parable as well. That doesn't quite seem like a parable to us because we're used to parables being a little bit more kind of fictional. This one almost seems like it's a little real. But when Jesus says, you know, when the Son of Man returns, he's going to separate the sheep from the goats, and that all is real. But then you get this parable, and the parable part of it is when Jesus is starting to tell his disciples how things are going to go. So the first part of the parable is that he is going to come back and he's going to welcome the sheep, welcome the good folks in, and he's going to say that this is because they have taken care of Jesus when he was poor, when he was naked, when he was in prison, all of those things. And at first, the sheep, they say, well, thanks, Jesus, but we don't really deserve that. When did we see you like this? And that is the same thing then for the goats when Jesus says, depart from me. You didn't take care of me when I was in prison or sick or naked or any of those things. Well, then the people say, well, hold on, Jesus. Had we seen you, then we certainly would have dropped everything and come running. But that is then what Jesus is saying. You have me to serve in your midst even when I'm gone. Even when I'm gone, I am there for you to serve. You are just going to see me in the visage of the people that are around me, the least of these. And the least of these, so Jesus kind of throughout his ministry, he talks about his disciples and those who follow him as little ones. He kind of uses these diminutive forms. And here, this is kind of what he's doing. He's saying, when you take care of those who believe in me, when you take care of those who need me, then you are actually serving me. And so that kind of wraps up then what Jesus is talking about with these three parables. After that, we get this real kind of hinge with what Matthew's writing. So in chapter 26 starts off, when Jesus had finished all these words, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man is to be handed over to the crucifixion." So in that way, you have Matthew kind of giving us this shift, this kind of, okay, now we're stopping Jesus talking so much, and we're getting back into sort of the action of this story. And that starts off with a plot to kill Jesus. And so the chief priests and the elders and all of the people, they gather together in the court or in the house of the high priest, who is named Caiaphas, and there they're kind of plotting together. So notice they're meeting in his house, in his court, and there they are plotting against him. So this is all being done kind of secretly. And then after that, we shift scenes. We shift scenes over to the home of Simon the leper in Bethany. Now, there's a lot of questions about who this guy Simon is. First of all, he's referred to as Simon the leper, but certainly people wouldn't feel comfortable hanging around with Simon if he were a leper still. So he probably didn't currently have leprosy. It's possible that Jesus had healed him of leprosy and he just kind of kept the nickname, or that there is maybe some other kind of understanding. There are other people who think that this Simon maybe is possibly the father to Mary and Martha and Lazarus, for those folks who kind of helped Jesus out. So they think that this is possible. Here we have a woman, an unnamed woman, come to him with a alabaster vial of very costly perfume, and she pours it on Jesus's head as he's there, and then people get indignant. They're like, "Why would you spend so much on this?" There are certain other gospel writers tell us that this costs up to 300 denarii, so almost a year's worth of wages. And so you can certainly understand why people would be indignant about that. You know, people would have all sorts of questions. Who is this woman who was able to get such costly perfume in the first place? Secondly, you know, why spend this all in one anointing? And so there's all of these questions that come up, and this seems to kind of go into the story with Judas. And so when Judas is the next story, there's this understanding that maybe Judas was one of the people that got indignant about this. Maybe this gives us a little bit of the motivation of what Judas is doing when he decides finally that he is going to at least check out what would be the case if he were to betray Jesus. So he goes to the priests and he asks them what he would get if he was going to betray Jesus. They tell him 30 pieces of silver. Now, 30 pieces of silver was not a ridiculous amount of money. It wasn't chump change, but it also wasn't anything that would have really probably bowled Judas over. So you can kind of tell that there is something to this amount of money, but there's not enough here that would really make somebody turn who wasn't turned already. So you can kind of understand that about Judas. Judas is going into this already with kind of the motivation to betray Jesus. So as Judas is looking for the opportunity, then we start off on another sort of course of action, which is the setting up of the Passover. So Jesus sends his disciples in, they're unnamed disciples at this point. He sends them into town. He says, you know, there'll be a certain person. He has already kind of worked this out somehow, whether that be miraculously or if he actually had a conversation with somebody earlier, sort of off script. We don't really know. But either way, he says there's going to be this person. Go and talk to them, and they will get you the room so that we can celebrate the Passover together. Well, when he celebrates the Passover with his disciples, we don't get a whole lot of detail out of this, just that he does celebrate the Passover and that a part of celebrating the Passover is he stops and he shifts the usual Passover liturgy. Instead of doing things exactly the way that we imagine them to be said in the Passover, he flips things around a little bit and he says, "Take and eat, this is my body." And then after a little while, then he says, "Take and drink, this is my cup." Now, these two statements would have come along with parts of the Passover that would have been sort of written out. Everybody would have known what to do at this point. And so Jesus here is kind of taking something that's very familiar and he's shifting it, showing that there's something new that's happening. And certainly there is something new that's happening. He's giving his disciples not only just bread and wine, but he's giving them his own body and his own blood in order to eat and to drink. And that institutes the Lord's Supper as we have it today. And so after he does that, then it mentions that Jesus gives them this kind of heads up that he is going to be betrayed. And he says, you know, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed. And surprise, one of you are the ones that are going to do it. And this causes all of the disciples to say, oh, is it me? Is it me? And you know, just you can imagine the fear that strikes in their heart when they go, oh my goodness, is it me? Am I somehow going to be taken over by Satan? Am I going to do something that's sort of outside of my normal will? How on earth would I be the person who betrays Jesus? And Peter even comes up and he says, well, I will never do it. Never, ever. I'm going to die with you. And as he says this, you can almost imagine a sort of pitiful smile on Jesus's face as he looks at Peter and says, you know, even you are going to betray me. You're going to deny that you know me by the time that the rooster crows. And, you know, you're going to do this three times, which sets up, obviously, later on when Peter does deny Jesus in that way. Now, interestingly here, one of the things that we do find out is that when Judas does say, surely not I, Rabbi, Jesus obviously knows that it is Judas. But there's another sort of tip-off that we get here that Judas calls Jesus Rabbi. Now, normally speaking in the Gospel of Matthew, whenever you have somebody call Jesus Rabbi, it means that they don't understand who he is. Much like when somebody says, you're the Son of David, we understand that that character really gets who Jesus is. He's the Christ. When somebody calls Jesus Rabbi, it shows us that they don't understand who he is, and they just see him as kind of a teacher. And that seems to be what's going on with Judas here, that Judas has not embraced Jesus as the Son of David, as the true Messiah, and just sees him as a teacher. And so maybe that's a little bit a part of the motivation that Matthew is kind of implying to us about Judas and why he does what he does. Well, after they are done with the Passover, then they go to the Garden of Gethsemane. And while they are in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus goes and he prays. He prays three times, each time leaving his three closest disciples behind. So he takes his three closest disciples a little bit further into the garden, and then he leaves them behind at that sort of middle point. And every time he comes back, he finds them asleep. Now, they've just had a big meal. It's probably very late in the nighttime. And because of that, you can sort of understand why they're sleepy. But then on top of that, every time he comes back, he's saying, why on earth are you still asleep? And he's just completely racked with the human emotions of anxiety because Jesus is 100% human as well as being 100% God, and he's looking forward at this thing that's going to happen to him. He knows that he is going to have to drink this cup of God's wrath, and yet his disciples don't understand that. They are not getting this, and so they're just going to sleep because that's what they would normally do after a big Passover meal, sort of like maybe an American would go to sleep right after a big Thanksgiving meal. Well, sure enough, as it happens, then as Jesus gets done sort of scolding his disciples for this, he says, get up, my betrayer is at hand. And we look up and you see Judas, and he has brought a massive crowd with him. And it appears that the temple authorities, the religious folks, they have sent out what appears to be the entire temple guard in order to get Jesus. Now, the reason for that are up to speculation. Some of it might be that they know that Jesus has performed miracles, and if so, then maybe they're a little bit worried about that. Some of that might be that they know that Jesus has large crowds following him, so they don't know how many people are going to be with him at this time. And yet they're bringing, you know, just everybody out, and here they're finding at most 13 people, Jesus and his 12 disciples, or I suppose 12 people, because it's Jesus, his disciples, minus Judas. And so as you get into this scene where Judas comes up to Jesus and he says to him, "Hail, Rabbi," or "Greetings, Rabbi," which that in itself is something that is a little bit odd. So normally speaking, in the culture of the day, in the etiquette of the day, what would have happened is that a disciple would never speak first to a rabbi. The disciple would always wait for the rabbi to greet the disciple first, and then the disciple could talk. And so here, when Judas is saying, "Hail, Rabbi," it's bringing an additional layer to that sense of what Judas is thinking. Like, Judas may even be just using that term rabbi, but he's not even giving him the respect that a rabbi should receive if that rabbi is kind of going by what is normal at the time. So then a bit of a commotion breaks out. Apparently one of Jesus' disciples owns a sword, pulls it out, and cuts off the ear of the slave to the high priest. Now, that even shows us, again, how many people are out there that not even the slave of the high priest has been spared and able to stay at home, but it's everybody. You know, they're picking up people from the kitchen in order to come and make sure that they've got enough people in order to take Jesus. And here Jesus does this miraculous thing. He heals the ear of that slave, and he tells them to put away their swords. And he actually kind of questions his own disciples' faith then by saying, you know, "Don't you think that if I really needed it, that I could pray to my Father and he would work these things out?" And so after that, then they take Jesus and they take him to Caiaphas, the high priest. And as they take him to the high priest, it's again in his courtyard, and so it's at his home. And so while they're there, this seems like it's a little bit out of order. It seems like it's not exactly how things should be. If there is a religious trial, that should probably happen in the temple. So there's a little bit here that Matthew is showing us that this is maybe not all on the up and up. And certainly we find that out in the next set of verses, because they show that they've already decided that they're going to have false witnesses. They're going to bring those false witnesses in, and those folks are going to try to get Jesus to say something or get the people to believe something, and Jesus is just not having it. But finally, there is something where the high priest says, "You know, tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus then says, "You have said it yourself." And as he says that, he adds this little flourish on, "I tell you, hereafter you'll see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Well, that's a direct kind of quote back to Daniel. And what Daniel is talking about there is the Messiah. It is the God. And so, you know, kind of rightfully here, the high priest tears his clothes. Now, this action of a priest tearing his clothes was something that would have been reserved for hearing blasphemy. It would have been sort of this way of really showing how terrible things are, that if a priest would have heard blasphemy, he would have ripped his clothing, and that clothing would have been very expensive. It was not something that was done lightly. And so for the high priest to do this really kind of shows that he does believe that there is blasphemy that is happening here as Jesus says that he is the Christ. And so as he does that, they begin to mock him, and they take him into custody. And as this is all happening, Peter is then out in the courtyard. Peter gets questioned three times about his connection to Jesus. We probably know this story pretty well, that every time he gets questioned, he says, "I don't know the man." And as he does that, then three times he denies Jesus, and we hear the rooster crowing. And as the rooster crow, he remembers that Jesus had already prophesied that that's what's going to happen. Well, thank you so much for being with us through these two chapters in the gospel. Believe it or not, this next 2 weeks, or this next week, the two chapters are going to be the last two chapters in the book of Matthew. And so we're getting really close to the end. Next time we're going to talk about the last part of Jesus' passion, and then we're going to talk about his resurrection. And that is very fitting for the time that this podcast is going live, because we're right around Easter. So happy Easter to everyone, and God's blessings to you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. If you would like to financially support more media from University Lutheran, please visit our website and click the Give Now button, which will enable you to engage in the Christian discipline of giving tithes and offerings to God through His church. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord lift up his face upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you with favor and give you peace.